know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, on Friday, August the 10th, 2018. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
And our guest, Susan Stanfield Spooner.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome, everybody. So today's show features two interviews with some local women who are making huge strides for the animals and the liberation movement. Susan, our guest here today, what are we going to be talking about with you later on?
Oh, everything from moms to grocery store to the environment.
Awesome. And lots of inspiration. I just met Susan a couple of weeks ago at the Earthling Ed screening that was taking place here in Vancouver. For those of you who don't know about that, Earthling Ed is a really famous animal rights activist. He was here screening his film Land of Hope and Glory, which was created because of the Earthlings documentary's impact on people in Britain who were saying that the undercover footage taken in slaughterhouses there did not exist. That kind of experience for the animals did not exist in the UK. So he made that documentary to show that it actually does. And that's where I met you, Susan, and you are just so full of life and ideas that I'm really interested to hear what else you have to say for our listeners, especially the activists out there who wants more inspiration on how to be a little bit more effective. And we also have animal rights lawyer Anna Pippis on the show a little bit later within the hour here. She's going to be teaching animal rights activists how to effectively document and report animal cruelty when they see it. It's quite easy to feel hopeless and powerless when we witness so much animal cruelty once we've opened our eyes to what's going on around us and adopted a vegan lifestyle. But Anna's going to give us some hope in this interview with her expertise as a lawyer on how we can actually make some change in situations where we do feel hopeless. So please stay tuned for that in the next hour. And for now, I just want to discuss a couple of recent events. I'm sure everybody has heard about the death of an orca calf in the waters off BC and Washington State that has transfixed the world. I'm sure we've all seen these images going around on social media. It brings tears to my eyes just talking about this right now. To see her swimming around and holding her calf up above the water, who's been dead for a week. Honestly,
and is she still holding up the calf? The
she
last
is.
I heard,
yeah.
That was a few days ago.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I'm just crying.
It's falling apart. The body is now.
The body is falling apart. The one I saw today just makes me so sad. Anyway, the members of her pod are also helping keep the deceased animal's body afloat. It's been more than a week. There is a direct link between farmed salmon laden with deadly viruses that Fisheries and Oceans Canada knowingly lets foreign salmon farming corporations place into our waters. And hence the starvation of our resident orcas. A lot of people are not quite believing or making this connection. But a prominent orca researcher, Paul Spong, has alleged that the calf's death could be connected to open net salmon farming on the BC coast. The founder of Orca Lab on Hansen Island said that's because a virus produced in coastal aquaculture called PRV, aka Piscine Arthurovirus, strain PRV1, is harming Chinook salmon. He says the explanation about the baby's death has a lot to do with the depletion of Chinook salmon. Spong said in a news release that the presence of fish farms and viruses that they're sharing has a lot to do with that. These two diseases affecting Atlantic and Chinook salmons showed dissimilar pathological pathways with inflammatory lesions in the heart and skeletal muscle in Atlantic salmon and degenerative necrotic lesions in kidney and liver in Chinook salmon, plausibly explained by the differences in PRV load tolerance in red blood cells. So that just sounds like something that would be not comfortable for the fish as well. I mean, it's causing issues for our orcas as well as for the fish, and I just think it's so sad. And this is why we have this radio show. We want to inspire people to live a more compassionate and conscious life. And speaking of that, leading into my next story that I wanted to talk about, have you all heard of 4-H?
Oh, yeah.
I definitely have. I actually saw a film about it, a little bit of a preview of a film that's going to be coming out in the next year.
Is it promoting 4-H or criticizing?
Nope. It's showing what happens and how sick it is, what this program is. If you want to talk about that more.
So 4-H is a group for farm kids to learn how to farm animals and agriculture and everything. So recently on social media, a mother posted a photo of her son who is standing with his little lamb on a leash at an auction ring with tears streaming down his face and the most sad face I've ever seen, with a number spray painted on the lamb's back. And animal rights activists have flooded the post's comment section after she wrote the following: "Proud doesn't even come to close to when I reflect on what I learned about our 8-year-old son this past week. Back in March, he decided that he wanted to do the Market Lamb Project for his first year in 4-H. We made sure that he understood that in the end result, one of his lambs would most likely be for sale at the fair and fulfilling its purpose as a market animal. He was set on the task at hand. He knew he would get attached to both lambs, who he named Pork and Beans, and he knew where one would likely end up. He surprised us with his tenacity when it came to early morning feedings before school, late nights nursing a sick one through pneumonia. He worked them every day, taught them how to lead and brace. He measured and weighed feed and supplements, as well as making sure they had fresh, clean water at all times. I would catch him hugging and loving them, and when he would have a quiet moment, there was no doubt he loved them. At fair, we could tell that he was very proud of his finished projects." This is something that the activists have criticized, his, her calling animals projects. "He faced his fears and walked into the show ring with his head held high and gave it all he had. He built a beautiful partnership with Pork and Beans. As a mom, my heart was so full and I was in awe of my boy. I looked at his dad beaming with pride at his son. Sale day came and we found out that Beans made the cut. Beans, our boy, and our boy posed for a picture for their potential buyers in front of a Douglas County backdrop. Then their auction number was painted on Beans' back. At that point, tears started rolling down my son's face. I hugged him and kissed his forehead, but he was still set on what was to follow. That night, we watched him proudly walk her around the auction arena to sell her for a number beyond what any of us ever expected. The incredible thing about 4-H auctions is that buyers don't pay just what the animal is worth. They exceed far beyond their market value because they believe in our children's hard work and want to invest in them. He left that auction arena on cloud nine and so pumped for next year. Sunday came around and we knew it was going to be a rough day. Beans had a color painted on her back which indicated which truck she was to be loaded on. Time came to take her out of the pen and lead her in that direction. My heart ached as I watched my child say goodbye to his partner. As much as I tried, I couldn't help but let the tears stream down my own face. My boy gave her many hugs and scratches. His father, fighting his own tears, asked if our son needed him to take Beans to the semi, but our sweet, courageous boy insisted on doing it himself. The barn was full with many kids and parents that were going through the same thing. What a beautiful thing." That, I can't believe she said, "What a beautiful thing." "These animals are destined for market. How incredible that they land in the hands of children who love them and give them the best care while they're here on this earth. I found myself in a strange place. I wanted to fix my son's heartache, but at the same time, I knew how important it was to follow through with the entire 4-H project from start to finish. Even though this was tough love, we had to allow him this experience." Sobbing, he loaded Beans onto the truck, walked her to the halter, back to the sheep barn, where he was embraced with many hugs from other 4-H members wiping their own tears because they had just said goodbye to their partners. And through all of this, he actually thanked us for allowing him this experience. Susan, what do you have to say? You recently experienced a 4-H fair, wow. I guess. Where were
you?
Well,
I saw that photo, but I didn't see the text, so that's quite something.
Yeah.
Well, I think the big thing is, you know, we're all, in a way, complicit. This industry is so massive all around the world that we all have to figure out how to get ourselves out of it. Mm-hmm. We have to divest from it.
Yeah.
So there I was in Chilliwack last year. We were camping at Cultus Lake and I saw the sign for the fair and I was like, let's go show the kids the animals. We walked into the main show barn and all of the cows, these beautiful cows, were tied to the wall. Their necks were tied to the wall with ropes.
Mm-hmm. And very closely to the wall. They can never move very much.
That's what my children saw.
Yeah.
It was awful.
It is. And it doesn't need to be that way. Open a can of beans.
Yeah, and I thought, even tied, sitting on hay, tied to the wall, what are they going to do, run away and break stuff? Like, in that moment, why would they tie? Right. It was weird.
All together, just so sad.
Yeah, I've gone to see those animals at the Peony, and I want to do that again this year, maybe do some reporting from there. So if you want to join me, Jen, because I think this issue needs to be spoken about further, and we don't have time to.
We are going to do an entire show on 4-H. I have so much more to say, including a parent who actually beat up an activist at the fair a few years ago and ripped his shirt.
Yes.
Okay, so we have to get on to our next bit, which is an interview with the very famous Vancouver-based animal rights lawyer, Anna Pippis. We love her. She's on the show all the time. She is Canada's number one expert on Canadian farmed animal law, and she's here to talk to us about how we can be better advocates for the animals. Let's listen to that now.
Welcome to the show, Anna. Thanks for being on again.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back.
So today we're talking about the incident that happened recently where a couple of local activists filmed a transport truck carrying pigs to slaughter on a long, hot day from Alberta all the way to Langley. The pigs were overcrowded and visibly physically distressed, panting, frothing at their mouths, standing upon one another's faces, and some of them unable to place all four legs on the ground due to overcrowding. We saw these images from the photos that the activists took through the holes in the transport truck. And so we're having you on today to discuss how activists or anyone can actually report animal cruelty. A lot of people feel like they can't do anything in this case, but let's talk about what happened in this incident.
So let's talk about this, because this was a really important, powerful little bit of footage of a part of the animal farming industry that is really common, animals being crowded and transported through extreme weather. But it's also something where there's a real opportunity for us, because it's part of the animal transport, the animal farming industry that we can actually see. So when people think about animal farming, typically activists think, well, the laws aren't good enough, we need to change the laws. And that's partly true, but there's more to the story, because we do have laws. We have laws that are supposed to prevent animals from being in distress. We have transport laws, so-called humane transport laws. We have, humane slaughter. We have these laws that are supposed to be protecting animals. And with these laws, the real problem we have is with enforcement. They're simply not being enforced. Either law enforcement is not conducting investigations, or they are conducting investigations, but they're really not finding in favor of animals. And the way that, just in general, the way that we get laws enforced is with public pressure. Politicians and law enforcement agencies need to feel that this is an issue of public importance. In fact, that's one of the things that Crown prosecutors consider when they're trying to decide whether to go forward with a case, because they can't prosecute every case that comes across their desk. So one of the things they consider is essentially, how important is this case? Is this really important to the public that we go forward with this? And if they have heard loud and clear that the public wants to see action on animal issues, then that will be factored into their decision making. So how do they hear us loud and clear? Well, through the media. We have social media nowadays, which is an incredible way for us to communicate with one another, but that is filtering out a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily be interested in these issues. So we're, a lot of the times on social media, we are talking to each other, or we're talking to people who are somewhat interested in the first place. But how we can really get the message through to decision makers, to influencers, to the older generation, to politicians, that kind of thing, is by getting things in the mainstream media. We want things to be running in newspapers and on the evening news and on radio talk shows across the country, speaking to people who might not be seeing our footage, of animals in transport trucks or whatever it may be. They might not be seeing that footage on social media. So what we advise people to do is to, if you see animal cruelty, or if you make it your business to see animal cruelty by being outside of a slaughterhouse or being near a transport truck, there are always sort of points of access for seeing animals where you don't need to trespass. And that's exactly what happened in the case in Kamloops, is they saw a truck and they had the wherewithal to go and actually stop and document it and look inside. And this truck was just pulled over at a rest stop, which you can see on highways. Just when you're traveling anywhere in the country, you can see these trucks. And so they recorded the footage, and what we did is we reported it to the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which enforces transport laws, and then we alerted the media. We sent out a media release and said, this is what we saw, this is what's happening, the CFIA is investigating. And as soon as you have a law enforcement agency investigating animal cruelty, that is a media story. That's interesting to somebody in the media. So what we want to do is get this story out there. So the CFIA, law enforcement, is investigating this case. This was really sad. And also use it as an opportunity to point to the problems with our sort of legal system to protect animals. It's not protecting animals. One of the other reasons that this is effective, in addition to the fact that people are you know, getting this information out there to people. And by the way, their footage was ran in all of these stories. So the Canadian press ran a story, and the Canadian press, for people who don't know, is a wire service. So they provide stories that are picked up by all kinds of other outlets who aren't necessarily writing their own stories. And they included the footage that these activists had taken in their stories. So it was seen by many, many, many more people than would otherwise have seen it. And in addition to exposing people to these issues, the other thing it does is it gives us the ability to point to weaknesses with the law enforcement system. So if we just record animals and transport, people are going to go, why didn't you do something about it? If we report it, either law enforcement takes action, in which case, great, they're prosecuting and they're going to put pressure on industry to actually try to improve things, or they do nothing and we're able to credibly say that the law enforcement system is broken. We can say, we have been reporting this for many years, multiple times, dozens of times, and law enforcement is doing nothing. That gives us the ability to credibly say our law enforcement, our laws to protect animals need to be revised. So it's sort of a no-lose proposition. It's very easy to report animal cruelty, and if we do it, either they take action and we win, the animals win, or they don't take action and we win, because now we can say laws need to be enforced. Mm-hmm. So as for how to go about doing that, so everybody who is going to be active in this kind of area, maybe at slaughterhouses or wants to do this kind of thing, should create for themselves a media list with the email addresses of their local media. So that might be local community newspapers, local community radio talk shows, the CTV and the Global and the CBC outlets that are local to your region. And then also the nearest location of the Canadian press. So in BC, that would be the Vancouver Canadian Press. And then other sort of regional, larger newspaper outlets. So, you know, if we're in BC, most people are probably in BC, then that would be maybe, if you're in the Okanagan, for example, and we're talking about Kamloops here, so we sent it out also to, Vancouver Sun, maybe the Times Colonist, maybe the Calgary Herald, anything that's kind of local that might be interested in what's happening if it's a big enough story, especially if the footage is particularly compelling and they're able to say, wow, this is really messed up, this is a news story. So compile a list of media. You can find these email addresses online. And then every time you get a story run, also add the reporter's email address to your list, because that reporter has shown an interest in these stories and should be alerted next time you have something similar. And then as for writing a media release, you can see samples on the Animal Justice website of what we consider to be effective media releases. Just go to our website and hit on media and look through there for some examples. But basically you want to say the city where it took place, so right away Kamloops, so people know, is this relevant to my region or not? And then the first paragraph should be basically summarizing the entire case in a very brief way, just what is happening here. So the CFIA is investigating after a truck of animals was shown, you know, XYZ animals stepping on each other, that kind of thing. And then you want to have some quotes from people that media can just pull from if they don't have the time or the interest in doing an interview. So if you are a person who recorded the footage, maybe you want to say what you saw and you felt. Just describe what you saw and you felt. And you know, you can use really honest language, because that's compelling and meaningful. And then usually when I'm doing a media release, I'll also include a quote about the laws and sort of what our position is on the laws. We have these laws, but they're not being enforced. They should be enforced. Ultimately, the farming system is beyond repair, because you simply can't farm hundreds of millions of animals and expect it to resemble anything close to humane. So that's the kind of thing we'll add. And then towards the end, you might want to include just some sort of high-level contextual thing. So in the case of transport, you might want to point out that our transport regulations are decades old. You might want to point out that other countries, the European Union, for example, has much better, more stringent transport regulations, that kind of thing. Anything contextual, anything that's topical, you know, any documentaries that have been on point or relevant and in the media recently or in the news that people might know about, books, anything at all that's going to help sort of like paint the picture for what's really going on here. And that's pretty much it. Then you just email that around with, a compelling subject to your media list, along with your phone number and your email address at the end, and hopefully wait for the media to call you.
That's great. Thank you for that. And I'm actually just looking at annapippis.info right now, and you have a handy little page on that for people to look at. I just want to read out some of the things that you've written in a certain section on reporting animal cruelty. It says, all animals being transported are covered by the Health of Animals Act and regulations, among other things. These laws prohibit transporting ill or injured animals, transporting animals if it's probable they will give birth during the journey, loading or unloading animals in a way that is likely to cause injury or undue suffering, crowding animals in a way that is likely to cause injury. Sorry, I just read that one. Transporting incompatible species, transporting animals unable to stand in a natural position, as we saw in the case we're talking about. Undue exposure to weather. I don't think that's even avoidable in Canada. We've seen that these trucks have holes in them, and they're going to be exposed to undue exposure to weather. And on the day that we're talking about with this case, it was 32 degrees.
Pigs don't have sweat glands.
I didn't know that, actually. And they're going all the way from Alberta to Langley, which I also just don't even understand. Why are they not being taken to a closer slaughterhouse? Do you have any insight on this?
Yeah, so especially with the larger animals, slaughterhouses have just been consolidated. We farm comparatively fewer of them, cows and pigs, and there are just fewer slaughterhouses. These slaughterhouses are consolidating to larger and larger operations owned by fewer and fewer companies, and where once we had slaughterhouses sort of in each community, now we have only a few mega slaughterhouses across the country.
That's interesting and sad, because I always ask people to imagine when they say to me, oh, well, if only we could transport them in a better way. I say to them, when you're on an airplane ride for as little as even 4 hours, you're complaining about the discomfort. Now imagine yourself in the back of a slippery transport truck. You're touching everyone else's body. It's turning corners sharply. You're sliding around on your feces and urine. You're not having a break for food or water. And then at the end, you get murdered. I mean, there's nothing nice about it. How can you make that nicer?
Exactly. It's hard to improve things. And that's why we always have a bit of sort of like mixed feelings about improving the legal system, because ultimately the solution lies in not farming animals at all and in simply shifting to healthy, sustainable, humane, plant-based agriculture. But in the meantime, it's better to reform things. And also, it just helps get the issue in the news. So we need to sometimes work within the existing framework in order to use language that speaks to people. If we just said, we saw animals in transport, transport is bad, everyone should go vegan, the media's not going to run a story. But if you report to law enforcement, then you can say, CFIA is investigating. Well, now you have an opportunity. Half the time, reporters ask me, is the only solution to go vegan, or is there a better way? And then you have an opportunity to talk about it, but at least you have their ear. So there's real value in at least talking about sort of the sum of the merits of reform, even if we ultimately don't think it's the real solution.
And in my experience, they usually edit out the part where you've had an opportunity to talk about veganism, which I find quite frustrating. But
at least you've had a conversation with a reporter who is an influencer, who is then going to go and think about that and ruminate on that, and then maybe be more animal friendly in their stories in the future.
Yeah, I do take an opportunity to get the ear of the reporter once they've done the interview, and usually hand them some leaflets. And you can do that too, everybody.
Yeah, well, you're a real opportunist. You're very good at it.
Okay, well, thanks again for being on the show, Anna. Always a wealth of information. So and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Jen.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
That was a great interview. Thank you, Jen. And that story that we actually featured on the show a few weeks ago when it happened, when the pigs were sweltering in the heat in Kamloops, and that footage was captured. We did an interview on that. Mm-hmm. That kind of brings me to my next story. So for longtime listeners of the Animal Voices show, if you go back way to 2015, you might remember a show that I produced called The Drone Show. And that was an interview with filmmaker Mark DeVries. He's the filmmaker of the film Speciesism, which is quite well known. And he started this factory farm drone project, which he has a website for. And now, because of all of this work that he has done exposing the manure pits of the pig industry, the agriculture industry, a federal jury has now decided that the world's largest pork producer, Smithfield Foods should pay $473.5 million to North Carolina residents neighboring its factory farms. So why is this? Well, a resident sued Smithfield Foods for unreasonable nuisances that they suffered from odors, flies, and the noise of trucks in the area. And this news comes just weeks after two related lawsuits awarded residents damages of about $75 million. So this is a huge blow to Smithfield. It's a lot of money that they're going to have to pay. And those who live near Smithfield's factory farms, which hold thousands of pigs in cramped, filthy conditions, have had to deal with the facility's intense stench. According to a neighbor not involved in the lawsuit, the odor was comparable to that of rotting corpses he'd found during his career as a police officer and firefighter, he said. And other neighbors have had to flee their homes when the sickening smell became overwhelming. And I can tell you, I have smelled this stench myself as well at a slaughterhouse in Los Angeles recently, and this is the stench that these poor pigs are carrying still on their way to slaughter in the trucks. I don't think I will ever forget this. I can't imagine having to live in this area where there's a pig factory farm right in your neighborhood.
Can I just say something though?
Yeah.
If anyone complains about that in their neighborhood, I hope they're vegan, because they're responsible. It's supply and demand, right?
Yeah, and I can tell you that where my sister lives in South Dakota in Sioux Falls, she says her city stinks. Why? Because there's a pig slaughterhouse right in the middle of the city. And do people realize this? Yes, they do. Are they going vegan? No, they're not.
Right.
But she has a plan to change that. So
I have no sympathy for anyone complaining about that in their neighborhood if they're part of it.
Anyways, Smithfield's response to this is that agribusiness executives and agriculture officials from North Carolina, Georgia, Delaware, and Texas, they have met with federal officials who have suggested that they might seek federal legislation to protect the agriculture industry. So that's sort of like where it's always going back to, is protecting the agriculture industry. What about protecting the humans and the animals, of course? If you'd like to see these open manure pits yourself, you can do that. You can check out the drone footage. It's at factoryfarmdrones.com. And like I said, this is an initiative by filmmaker Mark DeVries to expose what is happening, which would otherwise not be seen. But you can see it on this footage. So one more thing that I wanted to draw attention to for our news this week is the Chilliwack Rodeo is opening this weekend. It actually opens today. We talked about it on the show a couple months ago, and we did an interview to learn more about the rodeo. Well, vegan Canadian actress Pamela Anderson has added her voice to a campaign against rodeo events at the Chilliwack Fair. And earlier this week, she tweeted her support for the Vancouver Humane Society's campaign calling for an end to rodeo cruelty in Chilliwack. So as I mentioned, we did an interview a couple of months ago about this with Peter Fricker. VHS has been calling for an end to rodeo events, including calf roping, steer wrestling, and team roping, and urging local businesses and residents not to support the event. And can you believe this? Since then, the Chilliwack Fair has actually created a petition to support its right to host an annual rodeo as a direct response to the VHS campaign. And this petition has gained over 950 signatures so far. This is the 30th rodeo hosted by the Chilliwack Rodeo Association at the 146th annual Chilliwack Fair. And yeah, on the petition page, the Chilliwack Fair writes that the rodeo has an excellent safety record and meets or exceeds all British Columbia Rodeo Association rules and regulations. And in its first rodeo in BC to implement, it is the first rodeo in BC, they say, to implement the new Calgary rules to protect animals, apparently. So in 2018, the city of Chilliwack built a new $100,000 rodeo arena with state-of-the-art chutes and stalls to further improve safety for livestock and people, the statement reads. You can retweet Pamela Anderson's tweet if you want, which we did, and there's also more activity going on at the rodeo this week for animal advocates, which I will get into later.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
The Vancouver International Guitar Festival, August 11th and 12th. Join guitar builders, players, collectors, and aficionados for 2 days of live music, masterclasses,
special events, and the opportunity to see, hear, and play some of the world's finest handmade stringed instruments. The 2018 festival will be held in the heart of Vancouver at the Creekside Community Center. The Vancouver International Guitar Festival, August 11th and 12th. Tickets available at vancouverguitarfestival.com/2018-tickets.
So I have some upcoming events. There are so many events happening around town soon, and we only have 6 minutes to cover them. First of all, I wanted to talk about an initiative by local animal activist Jeff Regier. It's called TV Outreach for Animals. And Jen, maybe you could speak a little bit about what this is, since you join in on this a lot.
Yes, this is one of the most effective forms of activism I have ever taken part in. What we do is we go out onto the streets with a giant TV that is actually a very expensive TV that you can see in the daylight, and speakers, and we play undercover footage taken in slaughterhouses and factory farms, and we educate people on how to avoid funding that system. And we get all kinds of reactions. We get people who get mad, and we get people who say, thank you for showing me this, and we get people who say, I had no idea that this practice happens on so-called humane organic free-range farms. And of course, how would they know that? This isn't the kind of thing that we're advertising on packages in grocery stores. So we're out there getting the truth out, and it's great. We've turned so many people vegan, and some of them have even become activists.
So if you want to take place, Jeff has so many of these events coming up, and I just wanted to list a couple of them. There's one happening today, Friday, August 10th, from 3 to 10 p.m. at the Polygon Gallery in North Vancouver. Also tomorrow, Saturday, August 11th, and Sunday, August the 12th, from 4 to 10 p.m. on Saturday at Second Beach, and 2 to 10 p.m. on Sunday at Second Beach. And I think he even has more of these events coming up, so you don't have to come out for the whole 8 hours, like Jen probably will, just however much time you want. And Jeff says that even if you aren't comfortable talking to members of the public, it's helpful to have you just standing there either watching or appearing to watch the video, because it draws people to the demonstration. That's what my sister did, remember?
And also, if you're somebody that is vegan and you don't feel confident talking to the public because you think you might be asked something that you don't know the answer to, go to vegansidekick.com and look up the arguments to answers to common arguments against veganism. There's about 56 of the most common arguments that we hear, and really perfect, succinct answers that you can just read about.
Yeah, I also want to recommend Earthling Ed's 122-page ebook, which I read prior to our interview with him a few weeks ago. It's an amazing resource. Mm-hmm. It's free. It's at his website, earthlinged.com. It has, I think it's the top 30 most common excuses against veganism. It is so well written, and I highly recommend that.
And just watching YouTube videos of all the celebrity vegans, I hate to call them celebrity vegans because we all do the same thing, but James Aspie and Earthling Ed are all on YouTube, and you can watch videos of them in action doing this very same thing.
Okay, lots more events. I wanted to mention Saturday, August 11th, that's tomorrow, the monthly Surrey Chicken Save Vigil is happening at the Sunrise Poultry Processor Slaughterhouse in Newton, Surrey, from 1 to 3 p.m. You can join other animal advocates to bear witness to the slaughter of these innocent beings, and check out Surrey Chicken Save on Facebook for more info. I had mentioned before that there's going to be some animal advocacy happening at the Chilliwack Rodeo this weekend. So the Chilliwack Fair, as I mentioned, opens today, continues into this weekend, and the Fraser Valley Animal Rights Association will be organizing a peaceful protest to take place on Sunday starting at 12:30 p.m. So if you'd like to attend, to draw attention, please bring a creative protest sign, some comfortable shoes, and a positive attitude. You can find out more about this on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Also, coming up on Thursday, August the 23rd at 6:30 p.m. is a presentation by Dr. Will Tuttle called Healing Our World, A Deeper Look at Food. And this event will be hosted by my friend Julia at Vancouver Meatless Meetup, and entry is by donation. And we are so lucky to be having Dr. Will Tuttle stop by in Vancouver again. He is the author of the best-selling book called The World Peace Diet, which I consider to be one of the top three books I've ever read and a must-read for all human beings. Dr. Will Tuttle will be delivering an inspiring talk about the hidden dimensions of our culture's food system. and you will discover new connections and learn how to make positive changes that nurture wellness, awaken insight and awareness, and bring healing into our world. This is a great event to bring a friend to open their minds to what Dr. Tuttle has to say. He'll also be presenting a piano performance. He's an amazing music composer and pianist. For more information, go to meetup.com/meatless meetup. And speaking of meatless meetups, I'm also an organizer with Vancouver Meatless Meetup, and I wanted to give an announcement of a meetup that I actually just announced officially this morning. So this is brand new. I'll be hosting a dinner meetup at the Virtuous Pie Restaurant at UBC on Tuesday, August the 28th at 7 p.m. And yeah, I'm totally excited to be hosting our first meetup at this new location. It's a very popular restaurant, and it's 100% vegan. They feature delicious pizzas and house-made ice creams, and they're so delicious. The cost for our preset menu, which is going to be sharing from 6 different pizzas and a starter Caesar salad, and you also get a choice of dessert from their 3 new flavors, bourbon, vanilla, rocky road, and hazelnut latte. It's all $25, tax and tip included. You can go to meetup.com/meatlessmeetup, and I recommend you do so fast. There's only 27 spaces for this event. Actually, as of this morning, there's probably less than 18 now. So hopefully you can join me, Jen.
Can I just say something? A lot of people say that going vegan was the best thing that happened to them because they lost a bunch of weight. I got fat. The food is so good. Like, I'm just sitting here drooling.
Ice cream isn't diet food, and it's coconut and cashew based.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of calories. It's a lot of good stuff, and yeah, I can't wait to try out these new flavors.
Yeah, you can be a healthy, skinny vegan if you want to, or you can eat like me and just not be. I'll work on it. I'm working out these days. Anyways, are you done with your events? Is that everything, Allison?
Well, that's
all
for now.
Okay. And now let's talk about our in-studio guest here. My heart is bursting. 2 weeks ago, I met our in-studio guest, Susan Stanfield Spooner, at the Land of Hope and Glory film screening and talk by a very famous activist, Earthling Ed. Susan was bursting at the seams with passion and strategies for animal rights projects. I could not keep up with her conversationally. Her vast knowledge of the law, human behavior, and our school system and relevant industries was well beyond my understanding. So with a rich background in many fields of work and a positive entrepreneurial spirit, this mother of two is unstoppable in her mission to transform our global food system through education and to create a more compassionate, environmentally friendly world. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. I am honored to be here.
I am so happy to have you here. So let's hear about your journey into veganism and activism.
Wow. Okay. Well, I started as an activist in the downtown East Side, actually, right here. I co-founded the Hope and Shadows calendar with Pivot Legal with John Richardson, and nobody was doing social entrepreneurship back then. It was almost looked down on, if you can imagine. And everybody said to us, because my role was revenue and sales and partners, everybody said to me, well, that won't work. People won't support that. And so as an activist, we always hear that. And it's going strong. 15 years later, it's one of Canada's best success stories, and I think we really have to keep in mind as vegans that this is a marathon. You know, it's not a sprint. We will win. The world will be vegan, no question, no question about it. But it's a matter of time, and we have to just focus on big wins as often as we can, and that is the role of the daily life of an activist.
That's what keeps me going. Yeah. And it's getting easier, isn't it? We're getting more and more wins on a more frequent basis.
Well, it's becoming more mainstream. Like, literally 15 years ago, it was sort of looked down on what I was doing. I had a very high-profile female politician criticize me and essentially say, well, you should just make a bunch of money and then start a charity, and then you can help people. And I looked at her, and I was like, wow, the world thinks like that? The world doesn't think like that anymore. Yeah. Activism is very cool, and it's probably one of the most fastest-growing industries in the world.
It
so
is.
Good for veganism, good for the animals.
Absolutely. And on so many topics, it isn't just veganism. It's becoming very common for almost any business that we hear about to mention that there's some kind of a nonprofit that they're supporting in some way, right? It's becoming just so common that you're almost ashamed if you don't have something like that.
Yeah, and I think the Me Too movement was a big door opener for that. It gave a whole bunch of people, it gave half the world, women, permission to have a voice and be justified in our complaint against something.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was like, well, don't upset people. People always say that to me. Don't upset people, Susan.
Yeah.
But nobody cares anymore. If you're not upsetting somebody, there's something wrong with you.
And if you're not upset about something, you're too apathetic in life.
Getting in the way.
If you're too happy, you're not thinking.
Yeah.
Anyway, can you tell us about your company?
Okay, so Go2Go, plant-based fast food, I created in Africa, in Cape Town, because I wanted to find an alternative income for our family. My husband had been kidnapped in a war, and I'm a cook. I've always been a cook. That was my first career. So I kind of naively opened up a little food joint by the beach, because our home is on a surf beach in Cape Town. And someone walked in one day and said, oh, I heard this is the vegan joint, in their South African accent, and I had not heard the word before. I didn't know the word. I was mostly vegan, but I'd never heard the word before.
So you were calling yourself a vegetarian?
No, I wasn't even calling myself anything. Oh. I just eat plants.
Wow.
Yeah, I had moved to a plant diet to get rid of a depression I had.
Wow.
So I had yogurt and feta cheese on the menu, and everything else was plants.
Oh, okay.
So that's what, and then I started Googling, what the hell does this word vegan
that's
mean?
That's hilarious.
And I hit the biggest growing movement in the world.
When was this? What year?
2014-15 in Cape Town.
Okay.
Yeah, and nobody really was vegan there. I never met another vegan. It was strange that she came in, but you know, the way the vegans are, they tell everybody. And it was women. A lot of my customers were women, and they were surfers, so they were healthy, and they were looking for my kinds of salads and shakes and power balls and all that kind of stuff.
And so what has your business, or is your business, evolving into now?
Well, we put it on hold because when we came back to Canada to assess it, we realized that the lease rates in the cities are just way too high. Our model is high volume, low margin. It's kind of like A&W. You got to sell a lot of food to make money.
Right.
And that the vegan numbers just aren't there yet. So my dream is to have 100 drive-thrus in California. It's always been my dream. And when I opened the business, I was probably about 7 years too early for that. Mm-hmm. And most businesses, big businesses, can afraid, you know, they can bear those losses for a long time. But we didn't have a lot of capital. So I thought, okay, let's put it on the back burner until there's more people. I mean, I'd have to sell food to 800 to 1,000 people a day. That's a lot of people who are looking for vegan food. So I was early.
Well, you've been out of Canada for a while, and you've probably picked up on this since you've been back in Vancouver, but all of the vegan restaurants have lineups out the door almost every time I go, no matter what time of day it is. So I can't believe how much life is changing on that front. And also, I've got a friend, Laura Simonson, who we've had on the show multiple times. She started a vegan dog food company when she first approached me to invest. I rolled my eyes in my head, and I thought, you're way too early. People can't go vegan yet. How are we going to get them to get their dogs to go vegan? Guess what? I'm now an investor, because I've seen that this movement is growing so rapidly. I believe in it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's growing.
And it's tripling every year, and every 6 months it's tripling. It's like compound interest. It's exponential growth, and you cannot get better than exponential growth.
I seriously have this feeling in my heart right now just talking about this. I'm so excited. So you're an extremely driven person, and you apply that ambition to vegan education. So can you share with our listeners how you incorporate the vegan message into your daily life when you're not specifically at an event for veganizing people? For example,
well, I be the result. I guess that's what it is. My target is really moms and women who control 85% of food spend in the grocery store. So I chose that as my focus.
Smart.
And everybody's looking to save money. Everybody wants their children to be healthier. So that's why I chose moms. They may not make a healthy choice for themselves, but they will make the healthy choice for their child. So I put myself out there as a very hardcore vegan activist. I'm very extreme in my opinions and my postings, and a lot of people go, "Ooh, here comes Susan." But I believe that I make space for other people to then go, well, if Susan's doing it, then I feel comfortable making that change.
Yeah.
And so I just decided to be that person and kick the door down.
And you are positive, even though some of the things that you share on social media are the graphic things that a lot of us activists share. If I didn't know you, and if I wasn't vegan, and if I was maybe the defensive kind of person, I feel like I could still see past that and still not block you. I would still follow your posts, because you do have a lot of positivity. No, but we all get blocked, right? As vegan activists, we hear from many people, oh yeah, I blocked you or I unfollowed you because of the graphic stuff you posted. And it doesn't stop us.
Yeah,
like, well, somebody's going to go vegan if I keep doing it.
All my old friends, because I grew up in Vancouver, right? I grew up on the west side of Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I bet you all my old friends are just completely shocked about what I'm doing. But at the same time, they are so following me. I know that.
Right.
And I get messages, and I see them in the parks and stuff, and they say things to me like, go, girl.
Right on.
So people are waiting for that space to be made. So I have a huge regard and pride to be a part of activism.
Well, when I met you at that film screening a few weeks ago, you mentioned an interesting outreach strategy involving teaching kids and teens about veganism in school. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, okay. So, you know, by the time you get into your 30s and 40s, you just change less and you're more open to the world being bad and broken.
Yeah.
And children aren't like that. They're so ideal. And we want to sort of take advantage of that and allow them to continue to be ideal, like the 4-H story.
Yeah.
You know, you want that, that kid will become an activist. He will never forget the pain of watching his animal get killed.
We're all hoping that.
Yeah. And yeah. So even people like Jane Goodall, they're really using schools as that place, because in some ways it's almost too late for the people who are in their 50s and 60s. They're going to be gone. They're not going to change the world. Let's focus on the teenagers. My kids are 5 and 7. They know everything about veganism. They will change the world. So it's a good place to focus. And the schools are open to it.
Mm-hmm.
They have huge food programs. They want education programs. A lot of teachers have asked me for stuff. I'm always asked to go to schools.
That's great. I actually, when you brought that up to me, I was thinking, there's no way they're going to let us come into a school and talk about animal rights. But
you're wrong.
You're more strategic.
Yeah.
You're going to talk about food. That's probably the better angle, right?
They want you to go in there and talk about human rights. Like, my kid's school is the most multicultural school in Vancouver, I think. There's 31 languages spoken there. Everyone is from a foreign country. And human rights are a huge part of our education sort of community in the school.
Right.
So a human right is an animal right. It's a life right. It's just how you sell it to the person making the decision.
Absolutely. When people ask me what human rights have to do with animal rights, I can talk about workers in slaughterhouses who have to wear diapers because they don't get bathroom breaks, or people who maybe have come from Syria who've experienced war who can't get another job here. They already have PTSD and that is the job they have to get, and now they have more trauma every day.
Well, I was told I had problems getting my daughter in from South Africa, even though she is technically Canadian. I was blocked for many reasons, and I was told at that time 30,000 Syrians were being processed as refugees, and a big part of that was the animal industry was bringing them in because they can't find labor.
Wow, this is something that
you
don't hear about in
the slaughter industry. So you take the job, you get to Canada, you take the job, a couple years later maybe you get another job. Those are things that people don't realize are going on in Canada. We think of ourselves as being this sort of, you know, holier than thou nation, but we have a huge amount of problems to fix here in terms of labor and animals and rights.
Right. Well, thank you for being one of the people that's a pioneer in this movement. So through doing vegan outreach, you've come up with a list of 10 reasons that people either go vegan or, in your opinion, should go vegan. Can you tell us what those are and perhaps elaborate on each one?
Okay, so here's a few of them. My reason was depression. I had depression. So I didn't stop eating animals. I just started eating more plants, and there literally was no room on my plate for the animals. So mental health begins in the gut, and if you're filling your stomach with crap, you're going to feel unhappy. And there's a lot of chemicals and diseases and bacteria in animal food. So that's one main reason. So it's a very unknown reason, but it was my reason. Then I ended up at the vegan party, and I met like all the animal rights people. That was not my reason for becoming vegan, but it's a really integral part of it. Feminism, another big reason. 80 to 90% of animals who are exploited in the food industry are female animals because of our reproductive system. That's a huge reason. It's a great way to kind of intersectionalize all of the movements together.
Can I comment on that one? I have a lot of friends who are hardcore feminists, and when I ask them to consider the animals in their feminism, they get really mad and defensive.
Do they know the animals are women, the ones that are mostly exploited? They may not know that.
No, I explain the whole system, and some of them have said to me, yes, I know.
Yeah.
And get out of here with that talk.
Well, okay, so this is the other trick, is you have to find a way for it. You got to find somebody's pain point. The animal rights thing is very foreign to a city dweller. We don't bump into animal rights problems in our day-to-day life in the city. But a sick child who has gotten sick from a chemical that's coming from a food, that's a pain point that you could take advantage of and start a conversation with. So that's why I identified the 10 reasons, because it's a big net. It catches everybody.
Right.
Another reason is really passionate for me living in Africa is share the wealth, and animal industries are very capital intensive and they concentrate wealth in the hands of a few number of people. Small scale plant agriculture systems are more, they share the wealth more, they're more women focused. We can create more wealth for more people with that system.
Do you have any other reasons there?
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to remember them all. Chronic illness, for sure. Some, you know,
that's
illness,
an easy one.
Animal foods, yeah.
Yeah.
The environment, big one. Animal rights, obviously. Wages, better wages. We now have prisoners who are working in slaughter, and they're being paid 50 cents a day. Canadian prisoners are working in slaughterhouses.
What?
Yeah, $3.5 million bill that was just passed in Parliament. Well, I went to school. I went to Queens and Kingston. There's 11 federal jails there. And I used to run past these jails. I'm a runner. And they are now being used, like they are in the States, as they're training and rehabilitating prisoners.
My God,
but really, it's free labor because the animal industry offsets its costs to the public. And that's what it's doing. Our tax dollars are covering jobs. Payments in the slaughter industry.
And that is so counterproductive to healing people who have perhaps been put in jail for violence.
Yeah, so you're going to just kill all day long. I mean, can you imagine? Imagine not even being paid for that.
Wow. It's just, it's so counterintuitive. You hear about jails bringing in therapy animals and yoga classes, and now this is completely the opposite. This is going to create people who are, it's been proven that people who are violent towards animals end up being desensitized to violence towards humans. In fact, perfectly sane, kind, loving husbands have gone home to their wives and started to become abusive after months or years of working in slaughterhouses. I've watched videos of people confessing this.
Well, and that's why the plant food systems are so powerful. They are an incredible tool to use, because we need tools, right?
Yeah.
An organic, small-scale plant food system, it cannot coexist with violence.
Mm-hmm.
There's two systems. They do not talk to each other. So if we focus on those plant systems, we will literally decrease the interest in the ability for people to feel violence.
I have one final question before we have to wrap this up, but I have a few acquaintances who are vegan, and when they're purchasing or making their own food, they're fine with being vegan, but in social situations, they feel uncomfortable refusing non-vegan meals made by family or friends. So what advice do you have for them to stay strong in those moments?
BYO vegan food. I even have a bowl of salad in my purse right now, because I knew I was going to get hungry after this interview. Where do I get vegan food? Wherever I go, I take a box of food, and I offer it as a gift. I say, oh, here, I brought this, but I know I have my meal.
That's great. And then you're not really offending anyone. Why should you feel that someone's going to be offended if you say, I'm sorry, I don't eat that anymore? It's not an insult to the person that labored for you. They understand. People are making changes these days.
And I'm too old for that. You know, I'm 50, and a lot of the activists are younger, and I try and support them, because as you get older, you realize that it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Well, I refused your candy today. You gave me a candy. You unwrapped it with your bare hands, and you passed it to me, and I just got the heebie-jeebies, and I thought, I'm just going to tell her, because I don't want to put this in my mouth right now, and I'm a germaphobe, so I'm just going to tell her the truth. We're in the downtown east side. You just opened our front door. No, I'm not putting that in my mouth. And you were really cool about it.
Well, that's the power and the solidarity of activists, right? Like, we're incredibly honest with each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's the best community of people to hang out with, because they say it like it is.
Just drop the ego and be yourself. It's fine. It's totally fine. If someone else can't understand that, then that's their issue. So now let's move on to our final segment here. Has anyone heard of the Challenge 22? Allison?
I have.
Susan?
Yep.
So this is in cooperation with Anonymous for the Voiceless. It's a flagship project started in Israel in 1994, promoting animal protection and cruelty-free living. So Challenge 22 offers participants free supportive online framework for trying veganism for 22 days. It takes 22 days to form a new habit. This is why. So more than 100,000 people from all over the world have participated in the project since its launch in March 2014. While similar programs around the world are based on vegan starter kits and email guides, Challenge 22 is an interactive program that offers unique combination of group support and personal mentoring. So each mentoree gets a secret Facebook group, which enables participants to share their experience and learn from each other. It's monitored by experienced vegan volunteers, culinary experts, parents, students, longtime vegans. In addition to the group support, people can be assigned a personal mentor for the space to share and ask private questions. The program is supervised by certified dietitians who give nutritional advice on veganism. And each day, participants receive a small task. By the end of the challenge, everyone is equipped with nutritional information, cooking tips, recipes that enable them to maintain a healthy, tasty vegan lifestyle. So it all happens in a very joyful, supportive atmosphere. People upload pictures of their dishes, share recipes and cooking tips, talk about their daily experience, and all in all, live a great adventure together with other people in the same spirit. So this week, we did a call out to find a non-vegan who was willing to participate in the Challenge 22, and a friend of mine who eats way too much bacon, hi Denny if you're listening, has agreed to take part. We're thanking him with prizes, including vegan bacon from Vancouver's Plant-Based Food and Natural Products, which is located at an industrial in Maine area, free registered massage therapy session with myself, vegan lunch from one of Vancouver's best vegan pizza and ice cream restaurants. This includes a full pizza, ice cream, cream and a drink, Denny, if you're listening, and they know who you are, you can come in today and grab it. And thank you so much, Virtuous Pie, for that generous donation. You are definitely one of my favorite Vancouver vegan restaurants, and I've even recommended the CBR pizza. It stands for Chicken, Bacon, and Ranch. So it's all fake meat, obviously, but it's delicious. And Susan, you brought a prize pack. I'm looking at it right here. What did you bring?
Okay, so I got a bunch of stuff. I was hoping to bring a magazine from Mercy for Animals that's on its way to my place. It's a vegan, vegetarian starter kit.
I love those magazines.
Okay,
yeah.
Right, recipe shopping, everything. So yeah. I'll give those to you later today or on Monday. I've got some chickpeas from Ars, which is a Lebanese brand that Loblaws bought. A big bag of nutritional yeast. We love nutritional yeast.
Nutibooty, that's what I call it.
From Vegan Supply, up the street. Ginseng candies, a glass jar from Heirloom Juice that are great for recycled. I buy these all the time, Heirloom Juice. A catalog from Lush. 80% of their stuff is vegan. Bamboo spoons, a glass salad bowl that travels so you can BYO vegan food.
Yeah.
And a recycled kitchen basket. So I call this the vegan starter kit. I give these away all the time to people because one of the problems I find is that people they don't necessarily know how to remove animals from their recipes. So I teach them how to do that.
That's awesome. And for those who don't know what nooch is, or nutritional yeast, it's loaded with B12, and we sprinkle it on our popcorn and we make pasta dishes with it it's cheesy. So we put it in there in lieu of Parmesan cheese, and you can make dressings and sauces out of it, right?
Well, and this is one of the things that we need to do is figure out how all of these animal farmers are going to replace their income when they go bankrupt, because that will happen. And that's one of the things I talk about are these plants, and nutritional yeast can grow everywhere and anywhere easily in Canada. It's a huge product that's in demand. So that's an answer to the problem. You know, ginseng as well. Canada is a massive producer of ginseng. We send it to China.
I had no idea.
This is Canadian ginseng. It was discovered over 200 years ago in Canada.
And Denny, she didn't put her bare fingers on it. Yours is clean.
No, I didn't touch Denny's, yeah.
Anyway,
so lots of good things for someone to take home and explore.
Thank you so much. What a great show. And Allison, you're going to outro with a song that I'm actually dedicating to that sweet mother orca and her baby. So I'll let you do your outro and then talk about that song.
Yeah, so you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, August the 17th. We'll be doing first an interview with Rocky Schwartz of the Micro Sanctuary Movement. So maybe you've always thought, I would love to have an animal sanctuary, but I don't have the space. Well, could you take in a couple of animals? That's a micro sanctuary, and there's a movement behind that. So Rocky will be telling us more about that. And then for our feature interview, we'll be having someone on the show who I met him last year ago, and he's an amazing activist. His name is Ryan Phillips. He is a full-time animal activist, and he has done just what I have described. He lives in a condo with three pigs named Charlotte, Millie, and Pumpkin, and a chicken named Beatrice who takes daily dust baths on his patio. And he does vegan outreach with them every day, and he is changing hearts and minds by doing that. His stories are just so inspirational and amazing, and I'm looking forward to featuring an interview with him on next week's show as well. So please join us then, and you can also stay in touch with us on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Send us any comments or suggestions at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So Jen, tell us about the song.
Well, it's by Faith No More, and it's called Ashes to Ashes. It's one of my favorite songs, and if you listen to the lyrics, you can definitely apply it to the situation with this mother orca. We are responsible.
Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.